As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
This is Issues 2020. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Sedgwick County Manager Tom Sills. Welcome to Issues 2020, Tom.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning.
Certainly the biggest story of the year is the coronavirus pandemic. Can you describe how that has impacted your job as county manager for us?
Yeah, Steve, I will. It's a little bit of a long story, but I've been asked to tell this story many times, so I always break it into 4 parts when we kind of tell the story. The first thing when we went through COVID and Corona back in early March and April was the community health issue that we had to face right off the bat. Sedgwick County houses the Sedgwick County Health Department, which is a component and has a relationship with the Kansas Department of Health and Environment. This whole system works under CDC at the national level. So when we have a sickness, or in this case a major pandemic, the health department becomes critical in the operations and management of that. But this particular virus, this novel virus, was challenging on a number of levels. It was challenging as a virus because it could move. It was airborne. It could move through asymptomatic people. We didn't have a lot of supplies at the beginning of this pandemic. There was not a lot of testing materials. We couldn't even find protective equipment such as masks or, hand sanitizer or hand wipes, aprons, all the kinds of things that we need to manage a pandemic. And it's because it was a worldwide issue. There was this shortages of all this kind of basic tool. And, of course, there was no vaccine yet. There was no medicines to treat it. There was no cure for it, basically. So just the how this particular virus rolled was extremely challenging, and we had to get our hands around that very quickly and try to begin to manage and contain it. The second thing that rolled very quickly after the virus struck the country, the state of Kansas, and then Sedgwick County, was this litany of government orders that began to roll. Very early on, Governor Kelly declared disaster declaration in the state of Kansas, and our county commission declared the same thing, a local disaster declaration. Now, that is not unusual at a county level or even a state level. We do it every year in Kansas for tornadoes and floods and our weather issues that we have here. But this was different because there was really no end in sight on how long this declaration was going to last. And in fact, we're still under it today. So whenever you declare disaster, that brings FEMA into the play. We work with FEMA then in addition to KDHE. At that same time, the governor began to roll health orders. And then also it began to define for us in a very public way the role of the health officer in Sedgwick County, who's Dr. Menz. He is a household name now. Before COVID, I mean, Dr. Menz has worked with the county for years, mostly behind the scenes on, you know, flu epidemics and measles and those kinds of smaller scale health issues. But on this scale, this global COVID scale, he became critical, and he has a duty and obligation to roll health orders that help protect the community. And then, of course, our county commission morphed into basically a board of health full time. They also have a role in rolling out orders, local orders, that impact Sedgwick County. So this has kind of been an ongoing situation. I think everyone's keenly aware of the challenges that that brings, and it was kind of the first time that public health could be at odds with economy, and that was a unique situation for us as well very early on. Generally, they are very synergistic. If you have good public health and a good economy, they go together. If your public is able to work and produce, it all lines up very nicely. But in a pandemic time where all of a sudden some partial or full shutdowns come into play, that can cripple an economy, and we watched it happen nationally to us last April. And then the third issue with running the county and how it impacted county operations was just our organization. We have about 3,000 employees, and everything that the county government does is so service-oriented. In other words, it's people serving people. Whether it's EMS or fire or the sheriff or health workers, mental health workers at ComCare, the tag office, all of those, they're front-facing kinds of work, and it makes it in a spreadable, transmittable virus time. We really had to recalibrate, you know, how we did basic business so that we would keep our employees safe and also our general public that we were trying to serve. So that was a very trying 4 to 6, 8 weeks there early on, trying to reconstruct how our business processes worked. And then, of course, we have the courthouse inside the building. And just running jury trials and getting people in and out of court is very challenging for our judges and our state correction system. So we worked with them, continue to work with them, so we can keep the criminal justice system moving to some degree while we work through this. And then the last thing that impacted the county was the federal funding management piece of this. Very early on in April, May, the federal government rolled out Families First Coronavirus Response Act and the Economic Securities Act, which we call the CARES money now. And the state and the county had to pivot and receive and manage and account for that money and try to get it into the right places to best serve the people. And so we actually became grantors at that point. We've never done that in the county, so we had to pivot that particular operation as well, and are just concluding our CARES disbursements here as we get closer to the end of the year. So all of this combined has made for a very challenging managing year in the county. I think we've tried to do the best we could. We've made some mistakes, clearly, but I think overall, with the uncertainty and how we had never done this before, I think that overall we've done the best we could.
You had your own personal battle with COVID-19. Tell us about that, Tom.
Yeah, Steve, in late September, and I'll preface this by saying in the county we tried to be as careful as we could from the get-go, as best we could. Remembering back in April and May and June, you couldn't find a face covering. You couldn't find a mask online. There was none available. Everything was being diverted to healthcare workers as it should have been. But we tried to maintain distance. We tried to minimize meetings, and we tried to maintain separation even within those meetings. But this virus is very airborne. It can last in the air for several hours after someone is sick. And when you work in a public building, I think we all knew it was only a matter of time. And about the third, it was our anniversary is in September. Right around our anniversary time, oddly enough, I came down with a low-grade fever, and went and got tested and hit positive for COVID, and I began my isolation period. And for the first week or so of the virus, I thought maybe I was going to skate pretty clear. I wasn't feeling terribly bad. I was able to work at home remotely. But then on days 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, going into the second week of it, I spiked a more of a fever and just so much fatigue and headache to where I lost my ability to multitask. I lost my ability to read complex documents and basically was sick in bed for 3 or 4 days. And then slowly got better. It took weeks. I went back to work after my isolation period was over. But it took weeks to get back to what I would consider feeling normal. So it was a rough ride, and I feel badly for people that have to go through it and recognize that in the big scheme of things, I was lucky that I didn't have to go to the hospital. And there's so many people that get so sick with this. It's just very serious. But I respected the virus before I got it, and I really respect it after I've had it. I still wear a mask. I still maintain distancing. And we need to stay in that mode for the next several months until this vaccine gets more widely distributed.
Now, you've recovered, but and the vaccine is now being distributed for healthcare workers. Are you, even though you've had the virus, are you going to get the shot, get the vaccination?
When it comes my turn, Steve, I absolutely will. My personal opinion on this is, you know, since I've had it, we believe we have antibodies. I think I should wait till the end. I think those who are exposed, who have never had it, should get it first. But when it comes my time, in this summer or when there's enough vaccine, I definitely will take it. I'm going to do whatever I can not to have to go through that again. And if getting the vaccine helps me from not getting it or spreading it, I'm going to take the vaccine.
You're listening to Issues 2020 on the Entercom radio stations, and our guest is Sedgwick County Manager Tom Stolz. And Tom, the pandemic's had an impact on your workforce, on your county employees. I know you've had furloughed, you've brought some back. Some of them working at home. How does that work out with people working from home? They all have the computers they need and all that?
Well, yeah, that was part of the initial challenge back in March and April as we were pivoting the business processes. We wanted to try to work as many from home remotely as possible. So our IT department was scrambling, trying to acquire the computers to get it done and build the infrastructure so that it could work. And honestly, it has worked very well. I would say back in April, May, we were probably remoting a third to a half of our workforce where you could. There's just some things in the county you just can't remote. You can't remote a sheriff. You can't remote EMS. You can't remote corrections workers. But what we could administratively, we tried to remote at home. And I think it's worked out very well. And we probably still have a sixth of the organization that continues to remote from home even today until this passes. We did go through, we furloughed some employees back in April and May, brought them all back in early June, and have not had the furloughs since then. But we've done some budgetary things to try to be smart. We've deferred what we could, delayed what we could, so that we can continue, to manage as best we can through the remainder of the virus.
Now, beyond that, this county jail has really been really had been hammered because of the nature of what goes on over there. Tell us about the problems at the county jail.
Well, when this first hit, any corrections facility, be it a prison or a jail, you're clearly worried about that because of the nature of that business. It's confined. It's you have a lot of workers over there and a lot of inmates. In our local jail, anywhere from 1400 to 1600 on a given day. The sheriff and his staff. The first few months of the virus, we were very lucky, very careful, and very well managed over there. To where we tried to keep separation between inmates. We did steric cleaning on a weekly basis, monthly basis, to keep it as clean as an environment as we could. We did really well till about you know, August or so, late summer, and then it's just inevitable as the thing spreads, it gets into that to that jail and spreads to inmates and to some of our workers as well. And so, we continued cleaning, and the sheriff is managing that as best he can as far as separating, particularly when somebody's symptomatic, getting them away from the other people or getting them out of the jail. And I think, we're back to where we have control again. But if you look at corrections institutions around the state, they've all struggled. The jail is an interesting place. It's a transitory environment to where there are some people who are there for a relatively long term, weeks and months potentially, but the vast majority are, they come and they go, they move through the court system. So it's a transitory environment. So you're going to have people coming in every day, and when there's an infection raging through the community, it's just inevitable that's going to come in. But I think the sheriff's done his best he could. He's done a very good job in a relative fashion compared to other jails or prisons around the country.
Let's talk about the pandemic's impact on other county responsibilities. People who can't be sequestered or quarantined when they're working, and people are like road maintenance for the county, law enforcement officers, fire and EMS. What's been the impact on that workforce, that part of the workforce?
Well, we've, as an employer, the county, we've had our share of COVID positives, hundreds probably, and from a quarantine perspective, more than that. So even with our law enforcement, as best we could, we're trying to quarantine and keep them away from the work environment while they go through quarantine period. But and same with EMS. It's better now because we've got PPEs that we can. There's plenty to put on EMS and fire, the sheriff's deputies, masks and gloves, those kinds of protective devices to keep them as safe as possible. We didn't have that early in the game, and it was nerve-wracking trying to do work out there without protective equipment. But so we're trying to manage that as best we can. But we go through periods of quarantine, and we go through periods of COVID where people cannot work, and that's to protect all of our other employees and to protect the public we serve. So it's been very tenuous operationally for the county, as it has for all employers in the county, just trying to keep enough workforce not with COVID and not on quarantine to continue your business process. And it's been challenging for us, particularly with sheriff and EMS, corrections, Comcare. Those are very challenging areas that we've just tried to keep operationally plugging along as best we could while we work through the worst of this virus.
Another big impact has been on the courts, on getting justice done and getting people moving through the court system. Talk about that for a little bit.
Well, one of the first things that the sheriff and the DA and the district court judges did is they tried to empty the jail as best we could for offenders that we could come in that wouldn't jeopardize safety in the public, but we could get back into the court system. So the sheriff tried to get his population down as far as he could go. What happens, though, we had court system was totally gridlocked in April and May. I mean, nothing was moving, just some very minor rudimentary processes over there, but jury trials were essentially stopped. And the judges and the DA and the sheriff, they work very well together. We're trying to, and have been for the last 6 months or so, trying to ease this system back open as safely and as best we can through using plexiglass and separation methods and being, limiting the number of trials and limiting the number of people that come into those situations. And it's been a struggle, Steve. I think across the board in the state, our judges have and justice system has done as best they could, but we are log jammed to some degree, and then that has an impact all the way back to the jail again, to where if those processes are not happening, then the jail has more inmates, and some inmates cannot be released back into the public, so it adds stress to the jail. So we're trying to work through this, and I think, in the early fall when our numbers were pretty good, I think the system was beginning to work. Then when we saw, as a community, we saw our spike happen in early November, it kind of landlocked again, and we're just trying to work through that on a week-by-week basis. Judges and the DA and sheriff doing the best they can to keep the process moving.
What's been the impact on the county's social and health services as far as your contact with people who need help in those areas?
Absolutely. Well, and when you think about our department that serves disabled people, our department that serves aging, our department that serves mentally ill, those are all front-facing work. I mean, you have to meet in person with people, and it's also members of the public who are very at risk for bad implications if they get COVID. So we've tried to be as careful as possible. We've tried to go as remote as we could with teleconferencing, and like you and I are talking today on telephones or through Zoom calls and meetings. We've tried to do the best we can, but at the end of the day, it's just so much more effective when you can get face-to-face. Again, when we were able to get PPEs and plexiglass and separation barrier kinds of tools, it's made it better. But it's been a struggle, just to be honest with you. It's a struggle to provide those kinds of human-to-human services that are so greatly needed in this community in a time of pandemic. And we've done the best we could, and we're hoping that we can get back to a more normal operation by the middle of the year.
I hate to bring this up, but this could happen again in the future, and it's a terrible thing to think about. But
people ask a lot, what's the future? I mean, well, the immediate future is the vaccine and management, and let's get track tracing back under control, and let's maintain our healthy and safety protocols, and then. I think to answer that question that you just asked is let's learn from this, because we know, I think the science world will tell you it's inevitable that we're going to have to go through something like this again. So let's learn from this situation and all the mistakes we made, and let's try to get better so when it happens again, we're better prepared the next time. And there's a number of tangible things that we can do to better prepare ourselves next time for when this happens.
But it's the thing has had such an impact on people, not only on their physical health and well-being, but the mental aspect. Folks, it's been a very depressing thing for everybody.
Yeah. We have a new term that we've coined out. It's called COVID fatigue. I mean, people are just tired of it. They're tired of the separation. They're tired of the limitations on group sizes. They're tired of masks. And that's a real thing that we're having to deal with. And it's, we're so close to the end. The doctors have been saying from the beginning, a combination of herd immunity plus vaccine is our ticket out of this thing. And so we're so close to the end that if we can just keep these health actions up for a few more months, I think we can get around the curve on this. But you're exactly right. People are tired of it. It is, the physical part of it we were very concerned with at the get-go. We're still concerned with the physical part of it, the sickness itself. But there is a whole separate byproduct to COVID on mental health and illness, both those who were suffering with that before COVID and those who are now suffering with it because of COVID. We have called that the second shoe that's going to drop on this thing, and we have to be prepared. And as a community, we got to stand up for each other and make sure that we take care of one another and we're communicating with one another and try to get through this next phase of this. But it's a real dynamic out there. If we're keeping a very close eye on things like suicide rates, which for a while went down to almost zero back in April, May, and have steadily gone up ever since. So our community is struggling with this from a physical aspect, from a mental aspect, from a spiritual aspect. It has been a challenge like none of us have ever faced before, and we just got to do our best to hunker down and get through this and be a community and help one another.
We're almost out of time, and I was just going to ask for a positive statement. I think you've got given it to us. You've got about 20 seconds. What can you say you're going to 2021 here?
Yeah, let's take care of one another through the rest of this. We're in chapter 3 of the book, which is the recovery and vaccination part. Let's take care of one another as we go through this. Let's learn from our mistakes. Let's communicate better. Let's be better teammates. in every aspect of life, and it will prepare us for the next problem that we have to face. So let's learn from our mistakes and get better.
Tom, thanks for being with us, and I'm glad that you've gotten over the virus, and look forward to another year, maybe a better year coming here in 2021. But thanks for being with us on this year-end program, Tom. Appreciate
thanks
your time. Appreciate
thank
you. And say thank you to all those county workers who have done such a great job. We appreciate that, too.
I will, Steve. Thank you.
Our guest is Sedgwick County Manager Tom Stoltz, and that's all for this edition of Issues 2020. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.